First, as the older adult population grows in number in the United States, the number of younger people able to provide care shrinks. In-home caregiving is one of the nation's fastest-growing industries, but our guest says the territory comes with big issues of inequality. In a new book, our guest explains how she sees two groups of our population, the poor and the old, bound together by work that helps both of them survive. The poor take roles of caregiving while aging adults are in need of their care to be as independent as they can. Ilana Bush is an assistant professor of anthropology at the University of Iowa. Her new book is Inequalities of Aging, Paradoxes in American Home Care. Ilana, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, before we get into some of the issues you raised in your book, I want to talk about the method. You did what anthropologists do and really put yourself in the story. Talk about what you did to research this.
Sure. So anthropologists use a method called ethnographic research, and ethnography is a little different from some of the other kinds of research that social scientists conduct. Ethnographers spend a lot of time getting to know the people that we are studying and working with, and the main difference between other kinds of research is that we meet people in their daily lives, in their everyday context. We don't control anything. We ask people to invite us into their lives and observe and engage in whatever activities they are doing. So for this research, I spent about 2 years in Chicago working with the administrators and supervisors and workers and clients of two home care agencies, both in the agency's offices and in all kinds of meetings, but also primarily in older adults' homes when their workers were with them.
And one of the paradoxes you write about, you mentioned in the title of your book, is that a lot of people have trouble affording home care as they age, as they need it. Yet the people who are providing that home care are paid very, very low wages with sometimes unpredictable hours, very difficult to get full time. It's a strain on both sides of the equation.
Absolutely. So, and this is true, actually, if we think about this pattern is true whenever we think about care that is provided to individuals or in small numbers, that we often see that the cost of care for those who are receiving care are very high. But despite that, they're very high because they add up so quickly. So if you're paying $18 or $20 an hour of care, that adds up very quickly, and many people can't afford the amount of care that they would like. And at the same time, at $18 or $20 an hour of care, workers are often receiving a small portion of that. The national average is about $10 an hour. So, and that's because, not because agencies are necessarily making so much money, but because costs like covering the supervisor's wages and overhead and insurance costs and things like that are substantial. And so many families can't afford to hire as much care as their loved one might need.
And talk about who is doing this care. It seems like it's largely women of color, and immigrants in particular.
So it depends on what part of the country you're in, but overwhelmingly across the country, somewhere around 90% of all home care workers are women, primarily actually middle-aged and older women. So when we think about low-wage work, we often, assume that these are younger people. But in the home care industry, the majority of workers are middle-aged women. And indeed, depending on where you are in the country, they're typically women of color or immigrant women, depending on the population that's most likely to be drawn into low-wage work in general.
And tell us a little bit. I want to meet some of the people that you worked with. One, and you open the book with this, is Maria, one of the workers who took the idea that she was training you in doing this work the most seriously. Can you tell us a little bit about her story and her philosophy?
Sure. So Maria was a woman who had been born and spent her early childhood in Puerto Rico and moved and was raised by her grandmother there. And moved to Chicago to join her mother, who was working in Chicago as a, I think in her sort of late adolescence, early teenage years. And she had, as a young woman, a series of hard knocks. By the time she was in her early 20s, she was raising several children on her own and found her way into home care work after learning about it from another person at the public aid office. And so she had been in home care work or and elder care work of various kinds for several decades by the time I met her, and had developed a pretty strong philosophy of what she thought was important to know about care. And she told me a number of important things, but one of the things she emphasized was that good care meant seeing each person as a person of their own. She thought that old age brought out the sort of distinctiveness of every person, and that part of her job was not just to keep people alive or to tend to their bodily needs or their household needs, but also to help them experience themselves as the person they knew themselves to be. So that can mean all kinds of things. She talked about taking an elderly client who had been in the Navy and who loved to sail to the beach to watch the water. She talked about another client who was a flirt and bringing her young son by to hang out with her. And she talked about another client who she prayed with. And so she found ways to recognize and help older adults sort of continue to experience themselves in the ways that they felt the most sort of in themselves. But she did that without a lot of recognition of who she was or what kind of person that she was. So these relationships, as she experienced them, weren't reciprocal. She spent a lot of energy producing other people and enabling them to feel like the persons that they were, but never was really recognized as the person that she was.
Talking to Ilana Bush about her new book, Inequalities of Aging, Paradoxes of Independence in American Home Care. And you write in the book that this home care situation illustrates maybe some wider values in American culture. And one of those is a lack of value that we put in this kind of personal care labor, emotional labor, whether that's for a family member or for paid work. Can you talk about that a little?
Sure. So I think in the United States, we tend to value in all kinds of ways, work that we see as productive, as helping ensure, as an investment in the future, helping to ensure a kind of future that's desired. And we spend less energy thinking about how to make lives livable and celebrated in the everyday. And that means that we also spend a lot less time thinking about the value of the moment-to-moment aspects of everyday care. And there's a long history of this in the United States in that the everyday work of care, whether we're talking about the work of child rearing or the work of elder care, has often been the least valued aspects of that have often been sort of outsourced from family members to either unpaid women of color, if we're talking about histories of slavery, or to poorly paid domestic workers. And so we have a long history of concentrating our energy and attention on producing more things and building our building very elaborate material lives, but maybe less attention on how to care for one another in a sustainable way that, you know, recognizes the value of people in the moment.
And on the flip side, for the seniors themselves, you are concerned, you write that we have because they're not as productive, or maybe productive in that sense we think about in the economy,
right,
that they are viewed less and less as individuals, as people, contrary to what Maria was saying, and treating them as maybe more even fully developed people. We might tend to just lump them into this category of a problem to be solved.
Absolutely. Certainly our national discourse, and in fact, international discourse, talks about the growing population of older adults in proportion to the rest of the population as a major social crisis. We talk about the gray tsunami, or the ways in which aging and the number of people who are living longer lives is, you know, a drain on resources. And that is very much rooted in this sort of productivist value, this value of, you know, if you're not working and producing our future, then you're a drain on our society and you're dependent. And so we have systematically underfunded elder care, especially this kind of home care. And so we see that older adults spend a lot of energy trying to avoid being viewed through those stereotypes of dependency and non-productivity and sort of articulating their value. But in the broader society, most people end up being afraid of this stage of life, which makes it ever harder to convince ourselves as a community, as a national community, to fund it and to think about how to value and make this part of life integral to our social world.
We're talking to Ilana Bush, Assistant Professor of Anthropology at the University of Iowa. Her new book is called Inequalities of Aging, Paradoxes in American Home Care. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you or have you been a worker in this field doing home care, especially for seniors? What was your experience? How did it pay? Was it a fulfilling job, maybe even in spite of low pay? Or are you an older person yourself who's considering getting home care, or you have, or maybe you've arranged home care for a family member, a loved one? What was that experience like? In general, do we fund this kind of care enough in our society? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Ilana Bush, Assistant Professor of Anthropology at the University of Iowa. We're talking about her new book. It's called Inequalities of Aging, Paradoxes in American Home Care. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you do this kind of work? Do you provide home care for seniors or others? What do you think of this job? What's your experience been like? Or do you rely on some form of home care yourself to help maintain your independence? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Ilana, before we go to our callers, you write in your book that often these home care providers have a conflict between their efforts to take care of their own families and the needs to be on call and on demand for their job, for the care they're providing for seniors.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that they don't have a conflict. They think that they should be able to do both, and are deeply committed to doing both. Most home care workers take these jobs because they believe that they are good jobs to do in the world. They believe in the contributions that they're making, but also because they have a very real need to support their families. Many home care workers are the primary breadwinners in their household, despite the erratic hours and the low pay. For many of them, they bring in the most consistent incomes in their household. And so they find the competing demands of their work, like many of us do, the competing demands of their work and their families challenging to navigate. However, they're doing it on very low incomes without necessarily having any access to health care of their own or for their family members. And so many of them find that whether it's a economic setback or a health setback, that they don't have the support from their jobs or from the government that would enable them to consistently provide the care they are deeply committed to providing to older adults. And so those things come into conflict all the time. So conflict is really based in a system that where they're a key player in our healthcare system, but aren't able to receive the kinds of things that would make their lives more stable.
Let's go to our callers now. Nikki is with us in Milwaukee. Nikki, hi.
Hi. I used to work at home healthcare place here, and I used to enjoy it a lot. And it was crazy hours. Like, it would be in the morning, then I'd have to come back in the afternoon, and then it was never like a full shift. So I sought out work here as a day program person. So I take people on adventures. That's my day job. So a lot of times I get elderly people, but I get a lot more special needs adult people and special needs elderly folks that kind of just getting forgotten about by their family. So you have to kind of be their family. And I don't get as much as I like to, but it is deeply rewarding when, you know, they're like, oh, Nikki, we had such a great day, or thank you for taking us to the Jelly Belly Factory, or the simple things in life that, you know, they just like doing. And it's hard because a lot of them like live in group homes and stuff, and a lot of them are like older, and they're kind of like the forgotten people. And it's like, it's nice to be with them constantly, and nice to just to show them the compassion that humanity really has.
Nikki, thanks a lot for the call. Ilana, a lot there. Let's start with her first point about those unreliable hours. A lot of the women you worked with were moms themselves. They had families. Those unreliable hours can create a lot of conflict, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that to some extent is the case across low-wage industries, certainly in retail as well, but in home care it becomes even more complicated. Many, many older adults prefer to have their care in the morning. They'd like to take a bath or a shower in the morning. And so just in the ways that the work is distributed, it's not consistent across the day, which makes it hard for workers to have a full-time day. And certainly home care agencies manage that the best they can, but it's a challenging problem logistically. And there have been some solutions proposed about how to manage that, but some of that is also about how this, what people's preferences are when they want, when they need to have a bath or to have a meal or need help getting to the doctors. Home care has to adjust and be responsive to people's daily schedules, and so it's very challenging as a form of labor. It's certainly not a regular kind of labor.
Nikki, thanks for that call. We'll go to Miriam in Bailey's Harbor. Miriam, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What did you want to tell us about?
Well, one of the things you haven't spoken about is this. I and my life partner of 25 years live together. We are a lesbian couple. My partner is 100% disabled. She is 71. I am 70. I don't know what will happen to her if something should happen to me. I'm more hale than she is, but 24/7, I'm her caregiver. I bathe her. I do all the cooking. I do all the laundry. I do lots of housework, although we're trying to combine two households together. And if it's really hard for heterosexual couples who are married, it's seven times as hard for lesbian couples and maybe for gay male couples as well, because we have no family. We have no backup. If something happens to me, I do not know what would happen to my life partner of 25 years, and it's frightening.
Miriam, thanks for the call. Good luck to you and your partner. Ilana, your thoughts on that situation, Miriam, and I imagine other people are facing.
I think that Miriam's right that couples and individuals with who don't fall into any the sort of social expectations about what aging might look like, whether that's because they're LGBTQ or for other reasons, face additional challenges that require a lot of navigation and certainly raise a lot of concerns. Miriam and her partner might qualify for some of the programs that there are public programs that support home care, and they might, depending on their economic status and other factors, qualify for some of those forms of assistance. But I think it's fair to say that they might also experience challenges finding home care workers who they feel comfortable having in their homes. And so absolutely it is a real challenge, and our social safety net, it doesn't make it easy for anybody. It certainly is even more difficult for families in which the policies haven't been built to imagine.
Miriam, thanks again for calling and sharing your story. We'll go now to Lucia in northern Wisconsin. Hello.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm actually heading home from one of my cares. Let me speak to the companies that pay the wages. They need to be appropriately reasoned out, because when you have good people, you will lose those good people because they are not paid. They are not compensated well enough. I worked for two agencies in California before I moved here, and I had to work two because, they would just pay you part-time, and you can't really pay bills and have an adult life on part-time work. So really the companies need to get serious, and the world in general needs to get serious on their priorities as far as, paying somebody a decent wage. When somebody who is working, say, a fast food restaurant and makes more than a home care worker, that's where the priorities are definitely skewed, and that's where my comments come in. Thank you.
Lucia, thanks a lot for the call. And Ilana, that sets us up for maybe taking our last couple minutes. Can you talk about what kind of solutions you would hope to see based on your research and your experience seeing this firsthand?
Absolutely, Lucia. I really appreciate your comment. Absolutely. In fact, nationally, turnover levels in home care jobs are extremely high. We'd call them epidemic. They're somewhere between 40 and 60%, maybe higher depending on how you measure it. And a lot of that is because people can make similar wages with much better schedules and much less emotionally and physically demanding labor in retail, or especially in things like fast food. So there are all kinds of solutions to think about. I think one of them is there, and there are several groups that have been promoting them, so I want to mention those. The National Domestic Workers Alliance has been organizing home care workers and domestic workers around the country to push for increasing wages and for domestic workers, bills of rights and things like that, that will help stabilize the workforce and improve the wages and well-being of home care workers, which directly affects the well-being of older adults and other people who receive these kinds of services. So I want to support their work. There are a whole number of other solutions that the PHI National, which is a research and advocacy organization, promotes, ways of structuring the work, information for agencies about ways of supervising home care workers, ways of raising wages. But one of the things to note here is that though our conversation has mostly focused on people who are paying for care themselves, a significant portion of this work is paid for by Medicaid. And so in some ways, the Medicaid wages set the national standard for what home care workers make. And
that's where we'll have to leave it. Thanks to Ilana Bush, Assistant Professor of Anthropology at the University of Iowa. We've been talking about her new book. It's called Inequalities of Aging, Paradoxes in American Home Care. Still time for you to share your thoughts, maybe your stories and experiences on the Ideas Network Facebook page.